Good morning. On today's programme, the changing nature of Irish America and the resurgence in Mexico of the Eastern monarch butterfly. But first we go to Brazil, which is gearing up to host the United Nations Climate Change Conference in November. COP30, as the event is known, will be held in the city of Belém, which is in the country's Amazon region. But concerns are being raised about its capacity to handle an event of this scale. Sam Cowie reports.
Amid the decaying colonial architecture of Belém's historic waterfront, work is underway. As punters sit devouring plates of fried river fish and bowls of acai berry pulp, workers nearby are busy restoring parts of the iconic Vero Peso market that had turned 398 years old on Thursday. The refurbishment of the city's most famous landmark is part of the preparations for the United Nations Climate Change Conference. This year, Brazil's Amazon will host COP30. The Amazon is the world's largest tropical forest and acts as a vital buffer against climate change, and two-thirds of it lies within Brazil's borders, making the South American superpower a key player in global climate talks. Environmentalists largely cheered when Brazil won the bid to host. The last two COPs were held in petro-states, Dubai and Baku, and critics say that fossil fuel interests had too much influence. Now, many are pinning increasing hopes on Belém, especially with the United States pulling back from the climate agenda. President Donald Trump announced that he will exit the Paris Agreement for the second time. Belém is a sweltering port city located near where the Amazon River meets the Atlantic Ocean, and here, local officials are scrambling with dozens of projects to get the city ready for the event, which is set for November. Brazil's federal government calls COP30 a historic opportunity and a chance to reaffirm Brazil's leadership on climate change. The country wants to showcase its green policies, leadership in renewable energy and biofuels. It boasts one of the cleanest energy grids in the world. Deforestation, especially in the vast Amazon region, which is bigger than Western Europe, remains Brazil's biggest challenge to reducing its CO2 emissions. Under President Jair Bolsonaro, destruction of the Amazon soared. His administration weakened environmental protections and illegal loggers, miners and land grabbers thrived, often with the barely disguised tacit encouragement from Bolsonaro himself. That changed in 2023 when centre-left Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva returned to power after an election that went down to the wire. But while deforestation rates have plummeted since then, criminal networks in the region remain powerful and continue to evolve, with indigenous and other traditional populations still too often the victims of resource violence. The Amazon remains one of the deadliest places in the world to be an environmental defender. And while Brazil's green credentials are undeniably strong, questions remain regarding Belém's capacity to handle an event of this scale. The city lacks hotels, especially quality ones, and reports of COP30 accommodation price gouging are widespread. Authorities plan to bring in cruise ships to tackle the shortage, supplying an extra 4,500 rooms. Although this plan itself is dependent on the still uncompleted refurbishment of a local port. Belém is the gateway to the Amazon. It boasts pristine river beaches, delicious cuisine and a rich local culture. But it's also one of Brazil's most brutally unequal large cities. The Belém metropolitan area of some 3 million citizens is home to some of the worst housing and basic sanitation outcomes in Brazil. Although homicide rates have dropped in recent years, crime remains a concern, with neglected neighbourhoods often suffering the growing influence of drug gangs. Belém is the capital of the Brazilian state of Pará, that has been dubbed a cocaine corridor through which tons of drugs from Colombia and Peru pass along rivers, air and road to be then transported inside of Brazil, exported to Europe or worldwide. Pará state governor Helder Barbalho is a rising political star in Brazil from a well-known political family who has been mentioned as a potential vice president to Lula in elections in 2026. The centrist politician has so far walked a fine line between business interests and sustainability, drawing criticism and praise from each side. He often travels abroad to tout his state's green efforts at international business events like Davos. For many, Belém hosting COP30 also marks a political payback. In 2022, the state of Pará was one of the few Amazon states to back Lula's election victory. Some also see COP30 as a consolation prize. Beleng lost out to Manaus for the 2014 World Cup, a bitter defeat since Manaus, also an Amazon city, has no major football club. One of the most contentious projects underway for COP30 in Beleng is a highway that cuts through a protected urban forest. Avenida Liberdade, or Liberty Avenue, will be 13 kilometres long and will link Beleng to neighbouring cities in the metropolitan region. Conservationists warn it will harm wildlife in the region, while some citizens argue the road will ease congestion of Beleng's notoriously gridlocked traffic. In the long term, Beleng itself faces its own climate change threats. Studies suggest it could be one of Brazil's most difficult cities to live in by 2050 due to increasing extreme heats. Locals therefore hope that COP30 delivers for the city as well as the planet. For World Report in Sao Paulo, I'm Sam Cowie.
To the United States next. In 1991, the U.S. Congress designated March as Irish American Heritage Month. In New York, the Irish American Historical Society faces the challenge of serving an audience that is in many ways fragmented between the newer and older generations of immigrants, as well as between conservatives and liberals. Hannah McCarthy visited the Society's impressive building on Fifth Avenue and sent this report.
As I look out the window of the first floor of 991 Fifth Avenue, I can see an Irish and American flag billowing below me and tourists congregating on the steps of the Metropolitan Museum across the road. The handsome five-storey townhouse that I'm standing in is the home of the Irish American Historical Society, although fans of the hit TV series Succession may recognise the building entrance as the home of the media mogul and family tyrant Logan Roy. Inside the entrance hangs a plaque with an inscription of the old Irish proverb Tíorgán Teanga, Tíorgán Anam, and the names of the early members of the society that was founded in 1887 to protest the No Irish Need Apply signs that at the time hung on the doors and in the windows of many American businesses. The founders of the society campaigned to break down the barriers that prevented Irish immigrants from participating in the so-called American Dream, taking particular effort to highlight the role of Irish people in the American Revolution. By 1940, the society had amassed enough wealth to acquire the Fifth Avenue building that I'm standing in, and its members shifted their focus from protesting Irish exclusion from American society to celebrating Irish history and culture. Dotted around the building are portraits and busts of notable figures from Ireland and Irish America, although almost no women seem to have made the cut. On one wall hangs a charcoal sketch of Eamon de Valera, Ireland's first Taoiseach, born in New York to a Spanish father and an Irish mother, while in another corner of the house lies a white marble bust of Daniel O'Connell, curiously dressed in a toga with a small wreath adorned on his head. The decision to depict a leading Irish nationalist leader who campaigned for Catholic emancipation as a Roman Empire is perhaps open to critique, but the classical style certainly ties in with the old world glamour of a Fifth Avenue mansion. On the top floor is a temperature-controlled archival space which houses thousands of documents and books covering Irish and Irish American history. Many early members of the society and Irish American charities donated books and records, says Dr. Elizabeth Stack, the historian who was appointed as director of the society last year. The society's expanse of records includes collections of documents covering Ireland's fight for independence from Britain, including rare correspondence between Patrick Pearse and Charles Stuart Parnell, and an original copy of the 1916 Proclamation. The documents sit along records of charitable requests, including from ageing Irish maids looking for help returning to Ireland after decades spent working for American families. After a period of decline and mismanagement, there had been a proposal to sell the Fifth Avenue building in 2022 for $44 million. But instead, a new board and team overseeing the society has been recently installed. "We're delighted to be revitalising the society," says Elizabeth, adding though that from a historian's point of view and as the director, the society is what's important for me, not necessarily the building or the address. The society now faces the challenge of serving an Irish and Irish American audience that is in many ways fragmented between the newer and older generations of immigrants, as well as between conservative and liberal factions that are more polarised than ever under the second presidency of Donald Trump. "The newer immigrants are more educated than our predecessors were," says Elizabeth. "They are more focused on business and tech. We're not coming to be maids or to build subways anymore." Ireland has also changed, she says, adding that some sections of Irish America found it devastating when the referenda on abortion and marriage equality passed in Ireland. "Irish people at home tend to trend more liberal than they do maybe here," says Elizabeth, "so we have to try to navigate that, Even though, of course, old Irish America was very involved in unions and labour concerns and charitable giving. The Society has recently hosted talks on interactions between the Irish and Cuban community in 19th century New York in the context of the anti-colonial movement, as well as about the Irish firefighters involved in the emergency response at the World Trade Center during the 9/11 attacks. The Society has put a spotlight on the chaplain for New York City's fire department, Father Michael Judge, a gay Irish American priest who was the first confirmed victim of the 9/11 attacks. He was also known as one of the few priests who had administered the last rites to AIDS victims dying in the 1980s. The night before 9/11, Father Judge delivered a homily to a group of firefighters where he spoke about their vocation, about not knowing what the day is going to bring and jumping on their fire rigs when the call comes in, regardless of how small or big the mission. It's just the most impressive story, says Elizabeth. For RTÜ World Report, I'm Hannah McCarthy in New York.
Finally, we go to Mexico, where environmental groups have welcomed an increase in the number of butterflies that travel there from the United States and Canada to seek refuge from the winter cold. The migration of the eastern monarch butterflies is a spectacular natural event, and this year the numbers that have migrated have doubled. Scientists say that this is a positive sign that conservation efforts are moving in the right direction. Mariana Martinez Barba has this report.
The annual migration of the eastern monarch butterflies from the US and Canada to Mexico is one of the most spectacular phenomena in nature. Every year in the high-altitude forests of central Mexico, black and orange butterflies cluster on massive trees, seeking refuge from the winter cold. The insects travel over 4,000 kilometers to Mexico to hibernate. This year, environmental groups and Mexican officials say the eastern monarch butterflies that arrived in Mexico doubled in 2025, an increase of 2% from 2024. Last year, the butterflies only occupied 2.22 acres. This year, they found 4.42 acres inhabited by the insects, signaling an optimistic growth for the butterflies. Scientists attribute the year's population growth to improved weather conditions, with fewer droughts along the butterflies' migration route. Throughout their journey, the butterflies can experience dehydration, which makes moisture, particularly in the form of humidity, vital to their travels. Once they settle in Mexico, the cool temperatures and humidity allow them to conserve their energy. The high-altitude forests have also been trending positively. In a second report shared by the World Wildlife Fund and Mexico's National Commission for Protected Areas, forest degradation has slightly declined, with 9.14 acres of forest damaged between April 2023 and February 2024, down from 10.13 acres reported the previous year. These forests are vulnerable to illegal logging and drought, threatening the monarch's hibernation environments. However, for environmentalists, the latest statistics are a positive sign that their efforts are moving in the right direction. Jorge Ricards, the general director for the World Wildlife Fund in Mexico, said that the statistics were obtained thanks to the coordination between local communities and WWF monitoring. Ricards remarked that it's crucial to turn this year's increase into a lasting trend with an all-hands approach where governments, landowners, conservationists, and citizens continue to safeguard critical habitats along the monarch's North American migratory route. The monarch is unique in its route. It's the only butterfly to make a two-way migration like birds do. They cannot survive cold winters, so they use environmental cues to guide them south for when the temperatures drop. Scientists say it's still not clear how the monarchs are guided down south, but they have found evidence that the Earth's magnetic pool and the position of the sun aid their journey. The Great Migration is also stretched out among generations of monarchs. One generation makes the journey south, while successive generations make the journey north. It takes approximately 3 to 4 generations of monarchs to reach the U.S. and Canada. Pedro Alvarez y Casa Longoria, head of Mexico's National Commission for Protected Areas, said that this 2025 season, 8 colonies of monarch butterflies were registered. 3 were found in the central state of Michoacán and 5 in the state of Mexico. The largest of the colonies was found in El Rosario, one of the most popular butterfly sanctuaries for tourists to visit. Just a few hours away from Mexico's capital, the sanctuary hosts millions of butterflies a year. Despite the optimistic numbers, challenges still lay ahead for the monarchs. This year's percentage is still well below the long-term average. The fluctuating droughts and floods brought on by climate change impact the abundance of milkweed in the US and Canada. Milkweed is the sole host plant where monarchs can lay their eggs. Increased use of herbicides and pesticides have also contributed to the loss of milkweed. Scientists say that planting milkweed native to the areas of the migratory route can help sustain monarch butterfly populations. The Mexican government said, along with the Federal Environmental Agency and the National Commission for Protected Areas, that they are committed to keeping the monarch's migration alive. In Mexico, this is Mariana Martinez Barba for World Report.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The program was edited by Margaret Curley. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or on all podcast platforms. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.